that's why it's such a fantastic sport. It's a battle. It's great, and that's where the you can overcome those battles, you'll be a runner for life. And that's such. I'm so grateful that I probably won't stop running ever, unless something chronic happens.
Kia ora koutou, that was Marty Lukes. I'm Matt Raymond.
I'm Eugene Bingham.
And this is Dirt Church Radio, interesting conversations with interesting runners. You have until Sunday, the 28th of May, at time of listening, is exactly 4 days' time, if you're listening on Wednesday, to get to 57A Buchan Street in Otatahi, Christchurch, to the Further Faster mega, mega, mega autumn sale. Mm. It's their sample sale. Lots of brilliant jackets, canoes, tents, dog wear, cookware for dogs, canoe wear for camping. Overwhelming.
I couldn't get myself to Otatahi, but I did manage to get myself to furtherfaster.co.nz, and I was going, I want one of those. So yeah, so much.
I've moved on from Jet Boils. I'd like a Canadian canoe. That's what I'd really like. And I'm sure you could pick one up from Further Faster, the best independently owned outdoor store in the known universe. And let's hit that jingle now.
It goes something like Further Faster there in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jacob is delicious. Go to Further Faster now.
Oh, Further Faster there in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jacob is delicious. Go to Further Faster now.
Dirt Church Radio. Episode 194 of the Dirt Church Radio.
And we have made it.
And one of the things we made on Sunday was trail time together, because it's been a while, man.
It has been a while. You were away, then I had COVID, then I was recovering, and so we didn't get out there. So we got out there yesterday.
You were isolating before you had COVID.
Yeah.
Sort of pre-isolation, and then there was the actual isolation.
Yes.
It was rough, man.
But it was great. I loved it. I just loved smelling the pines, feeling the mist, and hanging out with me mate.
Yeah, it was perfect. It was really, really good.
It's good to see amazing how much out there too.
Yeah,
yeah.
Amazing how much fun you can have in an hour, because it was just a bijou jog.
Yeah,
don't want to hammer the recovery too hard, eh, old mate?
Yeah,
but like,
that's right.
Just fantastic.
Yeah, loved it. Yeah.
Speaking of fantastic.
Yeah.
Those who can't see, I was making eyes at Eugene is to say, hey, you should probably go to the next thing in the rundown, Marcus Renti's conversation last week. Incredible, great guy, doing great things, truly wonderful things. And, you know, trail dog, Batman.
She got a lot of love, sorry. Yeah.
And I didn't know this, Christopher McDougall, his upcoming sequel to Born to Run, Marcus features in that as well.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So... Heard it here first. Pretty cool.
That is really cool. That's really cool. Speaking of cool, you got to sort of hang out online with someone super cool, legend gets thrown in a bit, but this guy qualifies.
Look, Marty Lukes, and I wish you'd been there. You know, you were down with the Rona. My God. I felt at times I was a little bit out of my depth in terms of the Aotearoa running kind of lore, and we touched on my neighbour Gary, we touched on Sean Cooper, we touched on, you know, bloody winning the Kepler, drinking Raro and ginger nut, eating ginger nuts, like, and that was the tip of the iceberg. My goodness, what a conversation, what a treasure. And
yeah,
I mean, three-time winner of Kepler, three-time runner-up of Kepler, represented New Zealand at the World 100K Champs, winner of Northburn and Naseby, bunch of other iconic races, and a lifetime member of the Sumner Racing Club, and founder of and first person to complete the Craigieburn round. And also loves, you know, the Dunedin sound, loves music, and just an all-round amazing dude. Like, what a conversation. Yeah. So stoked. And also just was like, I wish Eugene was here because he'd know much more about this than I did.
Oh, I mean, I probably would have been terrible because I would have been a little bit starstruck because I remember back in the 90s reading about Marty in NZ Runner magazine. And just being in awe of him. And as he said, that was sort of, I mean, it was probably the 80s when you had to go to the local running store to get an entry form to enter a race, send it off, and then a few weeks later you'd hear whether you got in, when a number would arrive. But great conversation. You expertly piloted it, and people will love it. So I think we should get on with it, don't you? Oh, well, first of all, we should give a shout out to our Patreon patrons.
We should give a shout out to our Patreon patrons, the patrons that keep the patronage patroning. If you'd like to support what we do, we'd love you to come on board for as cost of as much as a cup of coffee a month or just a single donation of a cup of coffee. Help us do things that go into making a podcast, keeping the lights on, buying audio equipment and getting to races because, you know, the world is opening up and we really want to get after it. If you'd like to contribute, we're at Dirt Church Radio on patreon.com, so patreon.com/dirtchurchradio. And if that's not in your wheelhouse, that's totally fine. We're here for it and we're here for you. So, yeah.
Hey, we mentioned the Speed Freaks last week, which is the program encouraging and helping people to run, people in recovery to run. And this week we heard from Ed Kitchen, who's the program lead in Tāmaki Makaurau, where Speed Freaks have been for about 6 months or so. Of course, they started down in Otatahi, Christchurch, and you can hear all about that on a previous episode of Dirt Church Radio. Gosh, get that episode number because we keep referring to it. But anyway, look, Ed was saying they now have 14 volunteer coaches in Auckland, but they could always do with some more. So if you can, put your hand up. There are 7 sessions happening a week across the region. Some of these are with treatment services such as Odyssey and Salvation Army's Epsom Lodge. Others are community sessions open to all. For instance, done at K Road at 12:30 on a Thursday. You meet at Merge Cafe, and they also join the park run at 2 locations on Saturday mornings, Barry Curtis Park in Flatbush, which is possibly, don't tell Hobsonville Point, possibly my favourite Auckland park run venue, and Wairaka Park in Mount Albert. So get along, get involved.
It's amazing. And when we talk about recovery, this is people who are in recovery from substance, substance dependence. And one of the things with substance dependence is it's an inability to delay gratification. And I don't know anything better for delaying gratification than running and engaging with others in a pro-social manner. For those volunteering their time, thank you so much. And for those wanting to, you know, I would just Google Speed Freaks Auckland or Speed Freaks Christchurch and please get after it.
Yeah, we'll put a link in our show notes. We can find them on Facebook. So, yeah, do it. There's quite a few races on over the weekend. The Old Forest Hamner 100, say that quickly. But I haven't seen the results. But I did see a couple of that stood out and just wanted to give a shout out to couple of friends of the show who did fantastically. Glenn Sutton, of course, always there in the miler, came second. And Mike Field in the 50 miler got the big W.
Awesome. Yeah. Love a bit of Mike Field.
Absolutely.
We had some exterior action in Auckland.
Yes.
This time, Waitawa Park, regional park, looks amazing. 700 people out there across the various events. The first exterior in Auckland this winter, and I think the first possibly in a couple of years, correct me if I'm wrong. Beautiful park out near Clevedon in the south of Auckland. And the next one in about 3 weeks is right up the other end at Shakespeare Regional Park in Whangaparawa.
Yeah. And there was, of course, another exterior in Wellington this week, the third one of the year, I think. It's time at
David Hounsmith win it?
He certainly was the winner of the medium course, yes. Mm. And another familiar name in the short course, fourth and fifth, were a couple of people with the surname Hayvice. You may know them.
Spike and Fiona.
Yeah, yeah. So Fiona, of course, is sort of on the taper towards the 48-hour race in Sydney in a couple of weeks. So it's the way to do it. Go out and run a blat around with Spike, I suppose. But Yeah, that was at Red Rocks, which is I'm gonna guess it's one of your favourite places to run, Matt.
Depending on which direction one is running it, it is my favourite, one of my favourite places to run. I think I would like to go back this time because I'm slightly more in shape than I was last time we ran up it, but certainly running down it is one of my favourite things.
I just remember in you the world to do. Just disappearing. In fact, I thought you may have disappeared off the side of the trail somewhere because you were just gone and I was left sort of tiptoeing down through the rocks there at Red Rocks, and yeah,
and then when we ran up it, it was the opposite. I disappeared, but it was right off the back of you because I was.
Hey! It was a tough day. We had fun.
Oh, it was awesome.
Yeah,
incredible.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Let's get on with this.
Greatest run ever, which is the part of the show where we ask you to write into us and tell us your greatest run ever. It doesn't have to be a race or a mountain summit. It might just be a run around the block. Something that's sung to you for some reason. Send them in to us at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com. And this is from Emily Salzberg. Now, this caught me out. I thought it was Emily Forsberg. I thought, that's nice. She's writing in with the greatest run ever. But
even better.
Even better. We've got Emily Salzberg from Wellington. Here is my greatest run ever, titled Not the Old Ghost Ultra 2022. My coworker's hands clutched at the back of my office chair with a white knuckle grip. I pressed the submit button. It was 1:02 p.m. on the 1st of June 2021. I scarcely dared to breathe. The screen flashed. You are now entered in the Old Ghost Ultra 2022. The room erupted in shrieks of ecstatic joy. I was in. That's a uniquely Wellington workplace. I don't know about you, but my workplace doesn't care a bit that I run.
No, like, that would be, what are you doing?
In fact, they rejoice whenever I hurt myself. They're like, see, running's bad for you. Another reason why you can't beat Wellington on a good day, right? Sport workplace. Anyway, fast forward 8 months later to early February 2022. It was a calm Sunday night, and I had been watching races all around me fall like bludgeoned ducks after the red light announcement. Bit graphic. My husband raced Jumbo Holsworth in late January thanks to the indomitable race director Andrew Thompson, so I was confident that the race with only 300 entrants would survive with the introduction of a wave start. Then the announcement came out of the cancellation of Old Ghost Ultra, and I descended into a compressed 20-minute grief cycle of disbelief, shock, anger and sadness. Then I slapped myself in the face and messaged my Scottish Harrier clubmate Jeff Ferry, who I knew had also entered the OGU, and asked him if he wanted to go down to the West Coast and run the course with me on race day, and he immediately agreed. His training partner Andy Crossland, Upart Park Run race director, wanted to go too. Our plan was set in motion. I'd never met Andy before, and I'd probably spoken less than 10 words to Jeff in my life when we held our pre-race debrief via Zoom the Tuesday night before the race. When Andy sent us the spreadsheet of race logistics, aid station distances, time to drink at aid stations, and elevation profile, entire race weekend food list, specific mantras to rehearse at different stages of the course.
That is a next level spreadsheet.
He sounds like
I love me a good race spreadsheet, adventure spreadsheet, but that's next level.
Well, anything that can't be written down on the back of an envelope, you don't need to know. I knew I was in good hands. We agreed to meet the night before the run for dinner at Westport and finalise our mission. In true West Coast fashion, the weather for race day called for steadily worsening torrential rain throughout the entire day, peaking at 4 p.m. We set out for Seddonville, the start of the race, from Westport at 5 a.m. on 19th February. For several weeks before our run, Westport and the surrounds had experienced extensive flooding, with the road from Westport to Seddonville evenly washed out at times. Entirely washed out at times, sorry. This was evident even in the dark of our drive. However, we had a purely magical start in the dark just after 6 a.m. from the car park near the Rough and Tumble Bush Lodge. Throughout the day, both Jeff and Andy saved my life numerous times through their gear preparedness, and the first time was providing me with a spare head torch when mine died on arrival at the start of the track. We learned that there were 22 others, members of Wild Things, attempting the 85-kilometre run from Seddonville to Lyle that day, paying for their own helicopter drop aid stations at three locations, as the track is completely inaccessible by any roads. We set out 15 to 20 minutes after this group, but caught some of them along the way. This former mining track is majestic, and I cannot recommend it highly enough. There are beautiful trails along the Mohikanui River, many waterfalls and spring bridges, including one with a door halfway across to prevent possums and stoats from crossing, misty streams, lakes, a natural spring, bountiful forests, and apparently endless mountain views, which I didn't see apart from the first 1 to 2 hours because, true to form, our run for the entire 12 hours was in pouring rain. and it steadily worsened throughout the day. I can honestly say that I've never had a wetter run in my life. The scenery was jaw-dropping, and the company of Jeff and Andy, and discussing our top 10 best race run experiences and bucket lists, distracted me from the pain that my body felt, never having run further than 60 kilometres before. The Wild Things running group allowed us to use the aid stations, as they preferred not to have to helicopter all the food out again at the end. This was an absolute delight of the day, and Jeff may have drunk 5 or more Red Bulls. We arrived at Lyle Campground, the end of the Old Ghost Road, around 6 or 7 at night, having arranged to have my rental car driven to the end. We jumped in our dry clothes and bags of food with the utmost glee and drove back to Westport in the afterglow of finishing 85 kilometres of pure trails. And yes, it was still raining. I had to leave Westport early the next morning to return to Wellington, but Jeff and Andy had brunch with some of the Old Ghost race crew and the Wild Things runners who had done the Old Ghost that day. The race director told them that those conditions being present on race day, they would have made the course an out-and-back race due to safety in the high mountain terrain. Upon learning that, I was overjoyed that we'd been given the chance to run the whole course ourselves that day, as we may not have gotten to otherwise. Kia ora, Jeff and Andy, for joining me on our best run ever and making it such a magical experience. I would do it again.
Wow.
Epic.
I mean, everything, including spreadsheets. I give it to you, Emily. That is definitely a greatest run ever. Thank you so much.
I'd like to thank the wildly bourgeoisie Wild Things for helicoptering an aid station. Like, that is next level.
Yeah, with extra Red Bulls.
That's right.
The rest of you, send them in. We had a few through after last week's call out, but, you know, we're still needing more to top the bucket up. So go on, send them in. Stop saying, oh, I've been thinking about it. Send them in to us. Right.
On with the interview. Marty Luke's mountaineer turned extraordinary runner, 3 times winner of Kepler, 2 times winner of Northburn, ran at the 100-kilometre world champs in 2007, and he got 6th place in 6:46:50. Was quite rightly recently given life membership of the Sumner Athletic Club in recognition of all he's given back to the sport. This is much a history lesson, an anthropological study of the growth of running in Aotearoa, as it is a conversation, and my God, it's a ripper. So please enjoy. This episode of Dirt Church Radio is brought to you by SOS Hydration. SOS Hydration is designed by a doctor for use by the world's best athletes and those who push themselves in work, sport, and everyday adventure. You can use the word church at the checkout for the special 15% discount for listeners of this podcast if you go to soshydration.co.nz. and the flavours are delicious: coconut, watermelon, citrus, berry, and mango. Eugene, your favourite?
Without a doubt, watermelon.
Me too. Watermelon for the win. But, you know, prove us wrong. Go to SOS Hydration. Use the code CHURCH at checkout for 15% off. Very pleased to be joined from Christchurch by Marty Lukes. Marty, kia ora. Welcome to Dirt Church Radio. How are you doing, man?
Hi, kia ora, Matt. Thanks so much for having me on. Real good.
Oh, it's... Yeah,
hi.
That's awesome. It's our pleasure. Look, you've done a lot of cool stuff in your life, in your running life, but I understand that recently you became a life membership member of the Sumner Athletics Club.
Yeah, it's super cool as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, congratulations. Mm. What does that mean to you?
Oh, it's just, for me, just a bit of acknowledgement, I guess, for a bit of time in the sport. Goes way back, I guess, to the mid-90s when I discovered I could actually run. And I'd actually joined the Nelson Striders Club up in the Westies. I'd pretty much invented trail running here in New Zealand, because the whole trail running scene was, it just didn't exist. There's a whole story there. You need to get the Westies on the program too. So I joined up the Nelson Club, even though I lived in Christchurch, and I thought to myself, a bit silly belonging to a Nelson-based trail running club, what's in Christchurch? And everyone said, you've got to join Sumner. And I said, but I don't live in Sumner. And, 25 years later, maybe 27 years later, even on Saturday down at Hagley Relay in the weekend, bumped into a lady. She said, you've got to join Sumner. She said, but I don't live in Sumner. So, but I joined the club from recommendations, and straight away I knew it was the club to belong to. Russell Prince was still running super strong. Scott Molina, ended up being Cameron Brown's coach. We had Doug Lomax and a couple of guys who'd given the Western States a real crack in the back in the 70s and 80s. So, these guys had done the badass 100 milers overseas when in the 90s that whole sport wasn't a thing here in Aotearoa, New Zealand. So, yeah, and the club was centred all on trail running, but we'd get together to do the cross countries and road program here in Christchurch. And being a registered club, you could actually, take on you guys in Dunedin at things like the national cross country and everything else as well. So, great.
Well, club. I mean, the club scene's super important, and we're proudly we're not in Dunedin, we're up in Auckland. So, but I know what I. Yeah. It's all the people in Dunedin be like, can't really get their names out of our mouth.
I'm all bad now. Brilliant.
It's interesting that you say that sort of the locality matters. I ran a season of cross country very poorly for the Papakura Athletic Club and still wear the strip when I run, but I've never lived anywhere near Papakura. I live in Riverhead, and I had an old boy the other day. I was running, doing a road run and running through the village, and he just looked at me and shook his head. And he went, "You're a long way from home."
There's a big forest up there, isn't there? Riverhead.
There is a big forest. Yeah. It's a pine forest, and it's planted on fell when they went through and prospected for Cody and did a lot of the real slash and burn logging. There were Cody up here, but it wasn't too fertile, so it's sort of the bottom, so the Rodney district, the Kaipara far north, the Northlands. So it's sort of the lower part of that. And so it was a perfect place to plant pines. And so it's a working forest. So you get the, you get the, not many big hills, but lots of ups and downs, and no big hills really, but lots of ups and downs, and some brilliant trails. It gets pretty wet in the winter, but yeah.
Do you ever bump into Gary Redchen back in the day?
It's good that you talk about Gary. If I stood on my deck, I could spit into Gary's. What was Gary's yard? And he's moved on now, but and I guess explaining, this is all these names that you mentioned, and these are legends of the sport. Gary was a world 24-hour record holder for a while. He did what hasn't he won? Taranaki, around the mountain.
He was just so understated, but seriously badass on a world-class level for all things to do with ultra. And don't quote me, but I'm sure he got into those multi-day races as well.
And I think him and
thousand K type stuff.
And Eugene will be, kicking himself because he sort of Gary had a nucleus of runners out here that would come and I think some of them live with him. Our friend Sean. I'm sure he'll correct me. He came and lived with Gary, and they'd do these really just bonkers runs out all on the gravel road and gravel. Gary was a real, and the first time my wife and I met Gary actually was lined up at the Taniwha at the start of the marathon there. Yeah. So we're standing on this Waikato River trail, and there's this, this fit looking, older gentleman there. And we were like, "Are you a neighbor?" And he was like, "Where do you live?" We're like, "Riverhead." He's like, yeah, that's us. So, yeah, Gary's amazing. And he, the $15 ultra up the road at the Riverhead Hall that we got married in, bring your own Vaseline and jacket, and the rest is history. Just off you go.
Oh, it's awesome. He was such a leading part of the New Zealand Ultra Runner Association too. So he really had a big part with governance of the sport, and there's no bullshit here. I'm looking at my wardrobe, and I've got two trophies, which date right back to those days, which were passed on. The Ultra Association, they had a trail running champs, and they gave me both the women's and the men's trophies for safekeeping. And I'm not a fan of throwing trophies away. So the last thing I wanted was history being thrown away. So I grabbed them and I can see them literally 4 meters away.
Yeah.
In the wardrobe. So there's a Wero here. They've got stones on the top. They absolutely rock, literally. And if anyone wants to bring those trophies back as a, you know, New Zealand ultra running trail race of some form, I'll be delighted to hand those over as a bit of a kaitiaki for those.
Amazing. And, you know, thinking about, we were just, Eugene and I were out on a run the other day and we were just talking, you know, we were talking about Gary and the kind of, his mane's getting a bit grey, but he's still very much a lion, you know, and he's slow, he's in his 80s now, he's slowing down a bit, but he's still very much, you know, a force to be reckoned with. Look, taking it back, I mean, this will be news to so many listeners who've come in on the, not the later part, but almost that sort of when trail and ultramarathon running exploded with social media and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. I mean, you said back in the 90s when you found out you could run. I mean, what was that process for you?
It was pretty straightforward. I met my wife. She's still my wife. She wasn't my wife at the time, but I met her listening to some great Kiwi bands. A real fan of my music, and I think we've been seeing the Mutton Birds and the Bats hammering it in Christchurch mid-90s stuff, and I met Rach. And anyway, so I was a real mountaineer, mountain climber, alpine, into the alpine stuff. I reckon she saved my life. Well, I was doing some pretty dodgy stuff in those days, and you know, so I was in my mid-20s. I said to her, what do you do? And she said, I like to run. And I thought runners were these, you know, skinny geeks and singlets and, excuse my French, and short. So I really thought, it was pretty posy stuff because it was all about road running. And look, I had no idea. But I wanted to keep up with Rach, and she was training for the Avalanche Peak Run in Arthur's Pass.
Right.
And so I gave her the go. And I think I might have been doing quite well because I had a sit down in the Crow Valley and about five runners went flying past and I was having a Moro bar and a cup of water because that's what mountaineers do, eh? You have a sit down in a race. And I think I finished about, I don't know, fifth or sixth in that race, and I definitely know five people ran past when I was having a sit down. So, look, I had no idea and thoroughly enjoyed it Yeah, so that's what got me into it was Rach keeping up with her and just that love of being in the outdoors.
Oh, it's something special, isn't it? That you know what the outdoors can have to offer, and I think that it's very true that what makes it even cooler is when you're outdoors with someone who you love. Are you very fond of that? That just makes the experience all the more rich. So, did you both go on to join the Sumner Athletics Club?
Yeah. So, you know, we do a few, you know, races. It's pretty much it's probably quite a familiar circuit in today's world too. People do a big circuit of events, and so we'll do all the trail runs up in Nelson Way. And I'm just super grateful for Ava and Graham West for putting on those races, like Abel Tasman. Loop the Lake, Dun Run, Creases Crossing, that was held at the time. There's a bunch of them. And so, Rach was going quite well too in terms of results, and she would get wins and placings, and I managed to do the same. But Rach, unfortunately, she got chronic fatigue syndrome in the early 2000s after about 5 years, and that's been a massive learning curve. For her and myself, and I'm always super mindful whenever I work with athletes or see people train and race, because the body's not a machine. Okay, so some people can handle more than others, and so for Rach, it was pretty much curtailed her sort of story, I guess, as an athlete. But I managed to dodge the bullet and still, you know, carry on racing and that sort of thing too. So she did join Sumner as well, but not in recent years.
Do you think that's such a good point? And do you think that when you were, you know, doing these doing these races and getting after it when it wasn't. I mean, it was, this is the thing, right? It was, you'd enter races via mail, you know, at some point, and you'd communicate in real time. And that wasn't instantaneous. Yeah. Were there instances of people?
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet it was. But was, talk about delaying gratification. Were there instances of people having the same sort of issues with chronic fatigue or issues with overtraining syndrome or, you know, redness or chronic injuries that you see now, or was it somehow different?
I think people still got injured, probably training too hard. But the chronic fatigue side was really only been talked about, I think, in recent years. So for Rach, there's a lot of trying to work out how to fix using, say, vitamin C or vitamin B. Nobody really knew. And after about 3 years, I basically collated all the notes, all the symptoms, and, you know, just took it to my doctor. Come to my doctor, Dr. Richard Edmund. He'd been to the Olympics about 5 times, and he said to her, look, the medical industry just doesn't know what causes this, but we know it's something. And there's an awesome doctor up in Mahapua, Tim Muir, who said, Rach, we see heaps of people like you from Christchurch. You're all sort of A-type personalities. You wake up in the morning, you train for the coast to coast before work, you go to work, and your idea of fun is to keep on training when you come home. You throw some food in, then you're up crack of dawn to get all your disciplines in as well. So, yeah, Rach was doing a bit of multi-sport as well, you see. So I dabbled in multi-sport, but I was just grateful I could fit it in with biking to work, commuting to work, rather than doing extra biking, and I found it seemed to work quite well.
It's definitely good when you can integrate your training into your commute, isn't it? Because I mean, these things, you're right. There's an element of sacrifice, and that's beneficial, right? There's an element of sacrifice in whatever you do, but you can very much overdo it. I mean,
look, it feels great to train. It's highly addictive. It's, you know, the endorphins, the endocannabinoids, all the whole endocrine system has been pumped full of feel good hormones. The run as high as a genuine thing now. It's, science has unpacked that. Jeez, it's good. But then you throw in the psychology of athletes feeling like they're not training hard enough or not doing enough, and the social factors. And, you know, over perhaps the last decade or so, I've been increasingly mindful about social media. Running's bloody hard work. You know, it's not always joyful. It's a slog, and it really hurts. And yet, so much of the media portrays it as glistening athletes in the sun, having a great old time, and it's not actually like that half the time, being honest.
Well, I'd say it's so interesting, isn't it? You can have those. You know, that's the thing. Like you said, you write a letter. I remember we were talking to John O'White, and he was saying that he was, you know, this is a bona fide world beater, right? Who was having to clip out his news clippings and send them off to sponsors in an envelope. And now we're based on something that encapsulate, you know, it's a microsecond of someone's day. Here's that clip, or here's that photo, and I've got that one photo. And you're right, those moments are so fleeting. You might get, you might not get that sense of flow or for a run or several runs, and then you might get a glimpse of it. And it's okay to, I mean, it's all about the suck, really, isn't it? It's not about the
and that's why it's such a fantastic sport. It's a battle. It's great. And that's where if you can overcome those battles, you'll be a runner for life. And that's such, I'm so grateful that, I probably won't stop running ever, unless something chronic happens. Okay, so I'll always be running. Okay, always. And the rewards are too big to stop being a runner. But as we all get older, how we run changes and what we get out of it as well. And for any runner who's new to the sport, just be mindful to learn off the mistakes of others, and just be grateful to be active. and don't feel you have to conquer the world on every run that you go out and do.
Mm, absolutely. I mean, I had a moment, you know, speaking about Gary and thinking about that through, you know, a man who's changed through the lifespan, right, and has maintained his running or his activity through the lifespan. And I'd always look at Gary, who started running properly, you know, he was about, well, I'm 45 now, so he would have been just early 40s or just 40 when he started, and then just immediately, you know, started getting after it and yeah, dominating. And we had this, I always look at Gary and think, oh, what am I doing? You know, I'm kind of very mediocre and I'm this, that, and the other thing. And I had a meet, I saw him down at the bridge by our house, and he was, you know, bloody digging a post out or something. I don't know what he was doing, something hard, you know, he's doing something difficult. And I wandered down there to talk to him, and he was like, oh, hi, Matt, you know, and in his very Dutch way, you really should lose some weight. And I'm like, thanks, Gary. Yep, I will. And then he said, you know, but you've got three kids and you've got this life and you know, you've got a partner and you've got all this stuff. And then he had this really reflective moment, and he said, in hindsight, I wish I'd paid a little bit more balance to that, or, you know, I wish I'd sort of paid more attention. So it's so interesting, what it means for you in that moment, looking back in 40 years, it might not mean that.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, but it's a life process, eh? So, you know, I've been in a place years ago. It was probably about 2002, where, you know, the old greedy runner syndrome was probably really biting super hard, because you start looking at some big goals, big targets, and you know, the coaching program I was doing involved an easy week of about 220K a week. And because my psychology was just to go for it, I was still kayaking and still biking. And on top of that was three gym sessions as well. And it was only in hindsight I knew there was an issue, because I remember Christmas Day going out for my, 15K run in the morning on Christmas Day and having a fantastic evening in Wellington with my parents and family. But in the back of my mind while having dinner was knowing I'd still have to do my second run of the day. And I was just so grateful to get home before Boxing Day, because I could still get my 15 or 20K run in at about 11:30 on Christmas Day. And I went to sleep knowing I'd have to be up in the morning, Boxing Day, to do another run. And hey, that strict regime, two runs a day, 7 days a week, maximum distance, that's 270K, that lasted until May. Then I just completely blew up I just couldn't run. Couldn't run for a whole month. Absolutely could not run. And two other guys I was training with, one of them broke down on the road on the other side of Port Hills. And he just couldn't run. He couldn't run home. And he hasn't run since. And my mate Mark, he blew up at the same time. So the three of us, we just completely overcooked.
Wow.
But yeah, the point is, though, that you learn from those experiences, and you know, being totally unbalanced like that is not healthy, eh? So
It's such, I mean, and I guess that's the thing, isn't it? It's such a hard one. I can't and I won't. I refuse to sort of pass judgment on anyone who chooses to do or has the ability to do that and might complete a 220-kilometer week in not much more time than someone might do a 80-kilometer week or a 100-kilometer week. You know what I mean? But you're right. It's that essence of knowing that you – I mean, what were you what were you shooting for? What was the goal?
That one
that you had to run Boxing Day and you had to run Christmas Day. Yeah, you know?
Yeah. It's that dedication to a plan, to follow what a coach is saying, and once you get locked into that mindset to go for gold. The three of us were planning to run a race in Berlin at a marathon, to do an elite marathon. Sub 220, getting down. You know, who knows? I never got there, so never found out. But yeah, just to get super quick and super fit and to really push a super fast time. But on top of working full time, you know, community involvement and other, you know, other areas of life, because life shouldn't just be about running. There's only a certain amount, you know, of stress that can be taken, eh? As the three of us found out.
Yes. I can't believe, I mean, I can believe, but like that your friend had that, I mean, you know, is it a road to Damascus moment and hasn't run since?
Yeah, yeah. No, literally, Aaron just, what he says was he was running some sort of 40K run. He got halfway through it and just had to sit in the paddock, just contemplating life, working out how he's going to get back home.
Yeah, right. Mm. Huh.
And Aaron, if you're listening to this, you can correct me, but it's a story I've had for the last 20 years.
Man, I mean, you've had such a long involvement and career. I just want to, you know, kind of keep sort of drilling down about, you know, your history with racing and your history with the scene. Is there any races that sort of in Aotearoa New Zealand that stand out as being your favourite?
There's been some good. Oh, there's a whole variety. Look, back in the day, there was no trail runs except what Graham and Avery were doing, Nelson Striders, except for the Kepler. And that was the only one in terms of ultra. The Kepler was, to enter the Kepler, it was almost like a public admission that you're completely mad because it was over the marathon. It was an ultra. And it was much longer back in the day. It was 67 kilometres, not the 60 they say it is nowadays.
Yeah, not the soft 60.
My medal will say 67. I'll claim it.
That's amazing. No, say it. That's amazing. Yeah, and is this pre boardwalk?
It was so hard, Case. The track was pretty rough, but not as rough as what the first race was. And yeah, some great stories with the Kepler. But you know, I gave that a go, and I had a dinky knee the first year, and I had to sort of hobble home from Irisburn. So that first year doesn't count. The next year, I also went down with, you know, knowing I enjoyed trail running, and I latched onto this the Scottish doctor who I'd heard had got the coast to coast record, so I knew he was quite a good, you know, good athlete, and I managed to hang on to Keith over the tops. This is Keith Murray, and I still vividly remember Keith in his Scottish accent saying to me, "Marty, would you like a ginger nut?" So we're actually flying, Keith and I. We're actually hammering it along the tops. And it was pissing down with rain. Because these are the days of no health and safety. So it didn't matter what the weather was doing. You'd still pretty much just run across the top. So
no alternate course for you guys.
There was an alternate course. Actually, that was my first Kepler. It was an alternate course. But that was really wet. That was storm. Whereas this was just normal fjord and rain. So I grabbed this ginger nut off Keith's hand. It's like a relay baton. Grab a ginger nut. And I sort of eat this ginger nut thinking, this is fantastic, because Keith won the coast to coast on ginger nuts and raro. So it's got to be good for you. So I try to get this ginger nut down, but I could only get halfway, because when you're racing hard, it's really hard to eat a ginger nut. So I didn't know what to do, whether to give the ginger nut back to Keith and say, it's yours, mate, because he's Scottish, or keep it myself. But it's going to get soggy in my bum bag, so I just threw it away into the tussock. I still feel guilty about that.
I'm sure IKEA would have swooped in and snaffled. I have a photo of me sort of pointing, like crouching down, pointing to IKEA that's eating a packet of Goo Chomps, one Kepler.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, this isn't right, but I'm not. You know, you see their beaks close up, and they're like bloody hooks. I'm not gonna get into a tussle with this this parrot over its choice of brunch. So I mean, you went on to bloody win the thing three times. I mean, you'd had a couple of cracks at it.
Yeah.
What did that first victory feel like?
Well, it was a bit of relief, to be honest. That first year racing Keith, I was 2 minutes behind at Rainbow Reach, and I thought, oh, brilliant. Oh, you know, I'm not far behind. Then over the next 10K, he put 5 minutes on me. So it was a 7 minute gap. So anyway, roll forward the next year. I think he did about two. Keith was always religious in those 440s. Talk about training. Keith ran 3 times a week, 1 hour, and he might do a 2 hour run if he was doing Kepler, right? And he'd always do between 441 ish and about 448. You know, that's, and he did about, he'd always come second though to Russell Hurring. But Keith won it a couple of times, you know, 2 or 3 times. He beat, you know, beat me twice. Anyway, so I went back to take on Keith, and the next year I was 2 minutes behind at Rainbow Reach, and I thought I can't let him pull away. So I put the hammer down, and I got within 38 seconds at the finish line, and I knew I was close because at the finish there's the announcers, and I could still hear them saying, "We expect to see the runner and the Kepler," and I could hear them for about 4K away. I was getting closer and closer. I thought, and very soon we should expect the lead runner. And then I could see the finish line. I was thinking, hell's bells. He must be around the next corner. But then you hear the, and first, coming across the line, towards the line, Keith, man, oh, shit, he's got me. So I had a gap for about 4 years, did a whole lot of adventure racing, like Southern Traverses and whatnot, and that was pretty much Kepler time. It was a bit frustrating because the winning times were getting a lot slower. And I kept thinking, hell's bells, if I was doing the Kepler, I might have had a win. Anyway, so I had a gap for about 5 years, went back, and it was an alternate course, which wasn't a problem. But the problem was Phil Costley turned up. Now,
right.
To anyone who doesn't know Phil Costley, Phil Costley is the most winningest runner in New Zealand history. He's won everything from, you know, 100-meter sprints, national champs, a bit of an exaggeration. I think his shortest distance was 800, but national champ, right. 800, right through, and he even did 100K in Hackney Park just to get every distance. So Phil, seriously badass as a runner, and he's decided to come and do the Kepler Challenge. So, you know, he's... So I had no chance. I got close-ish, but so that was the second place. Anyway, went back the next year, and on the line was Carsten Jorgensen. Right. I think I was doing about 31 minutes for 10K in those days, but Carsten was doing 29 minutes, and he's Denmark's half-marathon record holder on 101. Right. This guy is European cross-country champion, 96, I think, and world-class orienteer. He also ended up running in Sumner Running Club too, along with Mike Causer, who also won the Kepler, and Russell Prince, who won the Kepler. And good old Vajin too, who's since won the Kepler. Anyway, that year, Carsten took off. There was snow right down below the bush line. There was so much snow. And it was epic stuff, but Carsten loved it. Coming from Scandinavia, he just thought the snow was awesome. So he got to Irisburn about 2:17, and
wow.
I was about 20 minutes behind. But I reeled him in to about 2 minutes at the finish, and again it was that sense of, oh bugger, another second place. I think the race commentator at the end, he said to me, how do you feel with 4 seconds? I said, it's actually not too bad, because if I do this another 56 times, I'll have a whole minute.
That's right.
Oh, shit. So I went, started training a bit harder or whatever, and I was very fortunate to get a win, I think the following year. And then really grateful to have got 2 more wins to make a three-peat, and I don't know. I sort of felt, yeah, got that one ticked off, got the monkey off the back. Had a few more placings after that, but I always felt, yeah, my heart, yeah. I'll come back one day, maybe when I'm 70, give it a go. So there's no pressure that way. I can just hobble across the line last.
Yeah, I don't think that'll happen somehow unless you hurt yourself.
Yeah, it's a fantastic event. It's such a great event. And, yeah, what they do down there for the community and the whole culture of the race, it's just wonderful. And the work they put into the environment there as well. So everyone gives back to Fjordland, that beautiful part of the world, eh?
Oh, it's super, like it's super, super special. This was the, when the race got rescheduled last, oh, it was this year, actually. It was January this year, which seems about 400 Earth years long, this 5 months. But this is the first time I was going to be down, my sixth start this year. Mm. It would have been my fifth finish. But yeah, it's so special. You're so right. It's just, there's something about, it's everything about it, isn't it? It's from the, you know, you go into, and we sort of circle back to that. I don't know any other race that you go in and there's the school hall chalk, you know, the canvas boards with the newspaper clippings, you know, put in, and you see these, you know, these very tough men and women running this thing, like you said, with a bum bag and cotton shirts, you know, drinking beer on top and all that sort of stuff.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Mm. How many, I mean, you could have held the ginger nut in the over your head in the rain. That would have been my play. But, you know, I don't want to second guess your strategy.
I'll do the next one.
But then IKEA probably would have swept in and taken it. Mm. So Kepler, I mean, that's you're right. Such a special race. When did it start to sell out just so quickly?
Mm. Well, that's a great question. I remember, you know, you go to a shoe shop and you get the entry form, hard copy, and you take it home, fill it in, and a couple of weeks later you'd find your checkbook and write out the check, and then eventually you'd send in your entry. Those days have, you know, well gone, so I'm a bit put off trying to enter now. I wouldn't know how to. Or miss out. There's a lot of pressures. It's wonderful what they've done. I think it'd be quite good if some of the elite runners, there's a slightly easier process. Maybe top 20 could be reserved for people to qualify. Just to have a race, a really good race of athletes. Because the race certainly was the pinnacle of trail running and would get athletes from Australia and Japan making the effort to race on New Zealand soil. And that was quite cool, actually. You'd have and Russians, I remember a Russian guy turned up once and he was a hot favourite. He got third that year behind myself and Keith. But Keith and I hobbled onto stage to get our prizes. And this Russian guy, he sort of ran through the hall and sort of ran up onto the steps. And he was dressed in one of these roadrunner type track suits.
Nice.
And he still got his prize and sort of ran back down the steps and he ran out. It was like, okay, that's, you might be able to run sort of 400k in a day or whatever, but
yeah and that's the thing, isn't it? No, it's certainly not a linear process. I mean, this, I just keep going back, and we, you know, I think about next thing I'm going to ask you about, you know, then you turned your tail, you turned your sort of eye. I want to get to adventure racing because I noticed you got a God Zone bracelet on, but you banged out a couple of North Burns as well, which is taking it to that next step in terms of both distance and runability.
Yeah, that's right. I guess I call myself a jack of all trades, master of none. Never got to Berlin for the first marathon. Still love my road running. Did a lot of marathons and thoroughly enjoyed, and I still do, I still thoroughly enjoy road running. And I'm really sorry. I'm just going to have to apologize.
I'm holding up a pair of road. I love it as well. And so does Eugene as a... Yeah. A classically trained road marathoner. Oh, I love it.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's Oh, there you go. Here we go. What are you showing? That's such a good. Ah, there you go. What's that?
Oh, no, sure. I haven't seen this one for years.
What does that say? That Buller Marathon.
There we are. Can you see?
Yep. Buller Marathon, men's winner 2005. Fantastic.
Yeah. And I went back 2 years ago with this high hope of burgling one more win. If I could get one more win, I would have 6 wins, which would be a record for the Buller.
Yeah.
Well, joint record with, I think, Mel Radcliffe, who's got 6. Anyway, so I turned up having done no road running since probably 2005. And so I was cranking along, having a great old time, not too far behind the lead runner. And at 40-odd K, oh, that's a hamstring pull.
Oh.
Which is why we need to do more road running training if you want to go and race successfully on the road. But it's the Buller is, again, we think about the Kepler. The Buller, again, is an awesome event. Community run, Westport comes alive. And, again, they do a great job over there. So, yeah, to anyone listening around the country, at some stage, if you're going to do a road run and get off that dirt, come and see the church at Westport, eh? Because it's a great bit of scenery. The Buller Gorge, no traffic, magic.
We actually, when Dirt Church Radio first started up, and we've been cracking on now, like this will be our fourth year, closing in on 4 years. The race director, I can't remember the person's name, unfortunately, reached out to us and was like, "You come stay at my house and I'll give you a sweet deal and you can come and race the Buller. It'll be fantastic." And yeah, we've yet to take them up on it. But
oh, you got it. When I did the Buller last, 2 years ago, that was his last year as a race director.
Oh.
And it's a real shame. He was such an integral person. Behind every great race, there's always one person that's the driver, and it's always like that. There's one driver. And the art for any event is to pass that baton on to the next driver. And Dennis did such a great job, to the point where on one of my Bullers, I was trying to find a place to camp, and I just didn't want to camp in Westport. I thought, there must be a spot in the Buller Gorge to camp out, free camping. And as I got closer to the start line of the Buller Marathon, I thought, well, why not camp out near the start? And then lo and behold, there's a great wee posse right next to the main road, about 100 metres from the start line of the Buller. Perfect spot. So I was in my wee tent in the morning and having a nice little lie-in, which you can do that when you camp at the start line of a big race. And then this vehicle pulls up right next to the tent and you can hear this vehicle. The window comes down. All I can hear is,
"Oi, didn't you know that there's a race starting in about an hour?"
So I unzip the tent, stick my head out, and this guy looks at he says,
"Oh, bloody hell, it's Marty. What are you doing?"
"Well, what do you think, Dennis? I'm bloody, having a wee camp out." So full credit to him. He rummages around in his SUV and he pulls out this official vehicle sign thing.
Yeah.
So I can give that to Rach. She's in the tent. she's like an official vehicle.
Nice.
So we get a permit to drive up and down the road.
Fantastic. I mean, if you're hooked up on the West Coast,
you're
hooked up, right? Like they're not just giving out official vehicle placards for any old person.
No.
I mean, do you think, I mean, you've obviously seen so much change in the sport for good or ill. What are some of the, what are some of the positives and what do you think some of the challenges are?
Yeah.
Compared to when you started and now?
Okay. So the big changes have been the huge growth in ultra trail, but corresponding complete demise in ultra on the road. And that's a real shame. I used to be quite addicted to racing 100K on the road and did a whole pile of them in New Zealand, around Taupo, on Hagley Park. Still a real good one, run by the Sri Shinmoy team. They're awesome. And full credit to them for keeping the flame alive. But there used to be a some amazing 100Ks in the South Island. The late Dave Cosgrove used to organise one in Marlborough, and the Dam Run in the Mackenzie. But and those 100Ks were great as a pathway for people who could, you know, enjoy ultra and want to go to international events, like, you know, World Championship, sanctioned by the IAAF. So it was a real great pathway to qualify for Athletics New Zealand and then race for New Zealand. So, again, I'm super grateful. Did that 5 times, racing for New Zealand. Loved it. And some of my best memories, you know, racing World 100K. And, yeah, there's still unfinished business, which, unfortunately, as I said, was it, you know, jack of all trades, master of none. I still get wound up by Russell Prince, because Russell's got the New Zealand record for 100K on the road. And Russell was a serious trail runner. He came from a hunting, mountaineering background as well to the sport.
Wow.
And I guess a bit like myself, he also loved to race on Tar Seal. And he raced the World 100K in Duluth in the States. He tells a great story, but I'll cut it short. He ended up getting second, which is a huge achievement because he was up against the top Russians and, you know, who took the sport very seriously. So he did so well, got second, and he did 6 hours 38, which is sort of like 3:50.
Stupidly fast is what it is.
Yeah, and I think Russ knew I could get, you know, go quite well in the 100K, and I got really inspired by not only Russell Prince, but also Russell Hurring, who won the Kepler 6 times. Russell Hurring was also a fantastic 100K road racer. So I want to let that thought settle for a bit for our listeners, is that these guys are the best on trail, but they're also the best on road, and they love their road running. It's a bit like chicken and the egg, okay?
I mean, they learn, road running is so spectacularly good for trail running.
Yeah.
You know, leg turnover, the ability to, you know, I think about running with Eugene, who appears to be one of those people who's got like a dial on the back of his neck. He just sets it.
Yeah.
This pace, presses a button, and he just maintains it, you know, and that's through years and years and years of just running, float, like tempo running, this, you know, it's incredible. Think about Dan Jones.
Exactly.
You know, it's just madness how fast that man can run. And he's a road, you know, he's a gentleman who hunts, fishes, kayaks, mountain bikes, runs a lot of road, and smokes trail. Like it's So was this the race in 2007 that you're referring?
Yeah.
There was a 100K champs in 2007 that had quite the surprise outcome.
Yeah. I did my first 100K in 99. Only really been running competitively a couple of years, but I got just really inspired by the whole ultra running thing. I picked up a hard copy newsletter the association put out, probably printed by Gary, and that just a light bulb off in my brain. This whole world opened up. I'd never heard of ultra running. It just didn't exist. And all of a sudden, I was reading about people doing, you know, multi-day races. There was a 3,100-mile Sri Shinmoy race, and obviously, you know, the big races through the Sahara. And it was like, oh my goodness, that's amazing. So I set my sights to qualify for France, World 100K. I had to do 7 hours 30, and I was dead and buried at 85K, absolutely gone burger. I was crawling at 5 minute 30K pace, and I was well off pace. I had to do the last 15K in 1 hour, so it's 4 minute K flat. When you're down to 5:30s, it's just too hard. My coach at the time, Dave Cosgrove, who was acknowledged at the Holbergs last year as an obituary, bless his heart, he gave me 2 Voltarens. He gave me 2 Voltarens at 85K. He said, take these.
Just not done today.
I sort of hobbled along for about 2K, and all of a sudden I could feel my legs opening up, and I thought, I want to get to France, and so, boom.
Wow.
Across the line, 7 hours, 29 minutes, and 49 seconds. So 11 seconds in the bag, and got back to Blenheim, had a share, and I just urinated blood for about half a minute.
It was
terrible. And since then, I've never taken Voltarians, and that's never, ever in a race, ever. So I learnt my lesson. Pretty much till next year, I could feel my kidney or lower back area. And I did go to the doctor after about 3 months to find out what was happening. And he advised me not to take Voltarians again. And I'd done enough research to know it plays around with your kidneys. And when you piss blood, it's a bit of a wake-up call. Anyway, I got to France. Yeah. It was awesome. So good. Yeah, so yeah, got to France. Got did a reasonable time, 7:15-ish. Got 49th. But over four or five campaigns, worked my way up through the placings to sixth place in Holland in 2007. But it was still a few minutes away off Russell Prince's time, which he still winds me up. So, yeah, grateful for a 6:46 time. Happy with that. And there were three Russians ahead of me, and I don't think the World 100Ks had any Russians since, so I wonder what they're on. Oh, I won't mention anything except ginger nuts.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's probably ginger nuts or whatever the, you know, and whatever the intramuscular version of ginger nuts is. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Probably, you know. Or they might have. I might be just sorry. That's inappropriate. I'm casting dispersions. I don't know anything about those gentlemen. They might be completely,
yeah,
fine, upstanding specimens.
But it's
wow.
Yeah, but it's interesting. It's a real shame we don't have those 100K road races in New Zealand as pure road runs anymore. I would love to see one resurrected. It'd be so cool.
Time to bring it. So that's a call to all the race directors out there. It's time to bring back the road ultra.
Yeah, yeah. The Sri Shinmoy team do a great job in Hagley Park, but you know, I think for them they'd also probably say having so many turnarounds, it's a short lap and there's a turnaround every 2K isn't conducive for super fast racing. But it's an awesome event, and but to have it on the road would be just so cool. That'd be awesome. But yeah, changes in the sport. Yeah, big ultra, you know, ultra on the trail, and that's where when the Northburn got promoted in its inaugural year, I just knew I'd have to go and give that a crack. And you know, again, very grateful to have got through that race, and I got the win, which I'm very fortunate to have got. At 60K, my anti-chafing strategies just weren't working very well at all. And it's a reminder to everyone listening to you know, get your anti-chafing gear sorted before you do a 100-miler, because the last 90K is just hell. And I was running this 20K off the top to the finish line at 140K, thinking, oh, Christ's sake, what? This is just going to be embarrassing when Matt Bixley overtakes me. Those of you who know Matt Bixley, his nickname's Mouth of the South. And I was looking back in the dark for a headlamp that was going to come down the hill at great rate of knots to overtake me, because I physically could not run that downhill. The chafing was so bad. And fortunately, I had enough time up my sleeve to take the win from Matt.
That's the thing, isn't it? They if you had, I guess, three, you know, pieces of advice to give to a young runner or be on a longer run, it's like eat before you feel you need to, yeah. Or four, I guess, drink before you need to, go out slower than you think you need to, and apply the magic sauce before you think you need to, because if you can feel it, it's too late. Hey, the horse is bolted. Just
absolutely
ridiculous. It's an unseen if they talked about chafing more
yeah
more openly. I don't care about your hamstring. Have you seen what it's going to do to you, to your undercarriage? It's just people would be just, yeah.
I was just going to add too that running naked does not work, eh?
I understand. Look, I understand that. It's so many I Well, I mean, Dougie Kyle famously, you know, in his 19-lap, 19-double-brown Blue Lake excursion, you know, did a couple of couple of laps in the altogether, and but it was cold, so I think, you know, maybe, you know, he wasn't sweating as much, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Hey, what does running, what does the outdoors, what does running look like for you now?
Yeah, great question. Sadly, Hagley Relay, 4K on the grass, loved it.
Yeah.
Next day, Port Hills, running with a couple of mates, just loved it. Saturday morning, I was on my bike coaching for Bevan Isles with the Extra Mile Runner Network. Just loved it, seeing other people learning to run and helping them. This morning, yeah, coaching people in Hagley Park, 6 in the morning. People who just didn't think they could do 5K, and they've done 8 weeks of the program, and this morning they were running 47 minutes, and lots of them were doing 5K, and that's just awesome. Seeing people go from that program in the morning to running 10K race in a race team, they've lost half their body weight. They're looking like runners, you know what I mean? They've got confidence, and yeah, they love it. Super grateful for guys that come up to me saying, where can I meet runners in Wellington? Because they're shifting out of Christchurch and they're going to feel lonely going somewhere else and want to get, you know, just those social networks. Challenges. Running's always a challenge. That was Bell. It's frosty morning. I want to lie in bed. Alan Sinclair, great marathon runner from Ashburton. He was a Com Games marathon. He said the hardest thing about running is swinging your legs out of bed. And he's only half right, because once you get your legs out of bed, you still got to get out the door. So
that's right.
My advice to anyone is put your shoes pointing to the door with all your gear there, so there's no excuses. I love my challenges, and I'm incredibly grateful that there's enough, oh, I don't know, nutcases, keen types, adventurers who are similar thinking, who have taken on the Werrell of the Craigieburn round. I've been totally inspired with my childhood. I grew up in the Lake District, and we used to have family holidays next to Wasswater, where the great Joss Naylor still lives. And Joss is every Kiwi trail runner needs to learn about Joss. And I met Joss. Oh, there we go. You got my copy. Because I gave my copy to someone and it hasn't come back. Someone...
I bought this. I'll send it to you, though, when I'm done with it. How about that? So it will come back. I'm holding up again. It's an audio. I've just started Feet in the Clouds by Richard Asquith, which is exceptional. And this is another cracker fell running book. Have you read that one?
I haven't run wild. Not yet.
I'll get your address after, and I'll send. This one's written by Boff Welly, who wrote Tub Thumping by Chumbawamba.
Brilliant.
You know, I get knocked down, and he's a fell runner.
Brilliant.
So, but sorry, I interrupted you. Carry on.
Yeah, no, that's great. It's just so good to segue into great literature, because we all need to read more, and why not read some classic running books?
Damn right.
Oh, it's just so important. Lorraine Moller's book, On the Wings of Mercury, is one of the greatest books to read. But yeah, no, when I shook Joss's hand in 2009 in the Lake District, and that was a bit of a moment for me, and so the concept of rounds is a very British thing. John Fitch, who lives on the peninsula, in the Bob Graham book, Fitch is, I think, only the second person to have done the Bob Graham round up to when the book was published in 2009. So we've got a round on Banks Peninsula, but it's 400 metres too short to be a British round.
Oh, no.
A British round has to be 30 miles. So Fitch and I, we often laugh. We say, we could run around this car park for 2 minutes to make up the distance. It's only about 55K. It has to be a bit more. But anyway, so I had this wee idea that we could, in Canterbury, have a Canterbury round, which would challenge everyone through Aotearoa New Zealand to travel out of their home patch to come and give this Canterbury round a go. So it's ultra running, trail running, but with a Canterbury twist. So it's got lots of rocks, no shelter, extreme weather, and no water. Perfect. And it goes to
yeah, it sounds gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah. And it's over 100K, so it's definitely a British round. And it's not super silly, so it's not like a super silly distance, which will take days and days. So it is achievable. I know there's talk in Canterbury that it could be done in under 24 hours, but I still think that's probably a wee bit tough. I think if there is a time thing, then it needs to be a bit softer. But it's it is a round. It's not like the SK in the Tararuas where you have to go up and down to make it a round. And it starts and finishes at the Cass Railway Station, which was the scene of Rita Angus's famous piece of art. So this run has got your art thing, it's got your sporty thing, it's got your history, got a bit of geography. And when you're sitting on your, holding your pint of craft beer or cup of tea in Ōtautahi, Christchurch, you can look across at the mountains and you can actually trace your finger along the ridgeline that you run along. The Torres Range, the Craigieburn Range, and that's what you run along. So how cool is that? So, and then if you ever drive to the West Coast to go and do the Buller Marathon, you can drive through the middle of the Craigieburn Round. And so, yeah, it's got everything there.
So if we want to, if people listening want are interested in, I mean, A, what you need to do is you need to go and get a copy of Feet in the Clouds by Richard Asquith, and I'd say also get a copy of Run Wild by Boff Whaley, and then get excited about doing a round. How do people find, where do you go for the maps? How do you get into contact?
Yep, we've set up a website portal of the BSR, the Big Sunday Runner Canterbury network. I'm super grateful that there's more techie people than me who have taken information I've created and sent it online. So Alistair McDowell, who's got some great stories, Alistair's been fantastic. He did the second round, and since then Greg Hamilton has done the third round. And Greg has the fastest time at the moment. But I'm always in my mind, it's always about the challenge. Time is irrelevant. And I'm grateful now that there's been enough guys starting the round. And also Rose Pearson was the first lady to give it a go. And full credit to Rose. She met me in town for a coffee and she gave it full respect. And she turned back because of the weather. And that's why I don't want people to get too crazy. I want people to realise it is a high alpine route. A lot of the routes at 2,000 metres above sea level. And so, you know, this is the real world. So don't get caught out up there. But there's been about 7 failed attempts, so it's only got a 30% hit rate. So it's not a given, okay?
Yeah.
And some of these people who have turned back are some of the best ultra-adventure-type runners in Canterbury. So there we go. There's a challenge.
Marty, that's amazing. Look, I mean, I think that if you're up for it, we'd love to get you back on the podcast when Eugene is with us. He's out with a mystery illness tonight, but because I'm sure, you know, he's far more of a, like yourself, he's a running historian, and it'd be amazing to take a really, really kind of deep dive into this stuff. You've been so generous with your time, and I just want to ask you one last question before I let you go, and that's Marty Luke's. What's been your greatest run ever?
Oh, that's a great question. Oh, the greatest run ever. Oh, my goodness. If I'm being brutally honest, I can't answer that question, if I'm brutally honest. But, where do you start and finish? Probably my first run, realising I could, and not being disheartened because it was hard work or, you know, those early runs. Yes. You know, what gets people off the couch, you know, is it someone or reading something? No, that was probably my greatest run. If I hadn't done that, I wouldn't be here. I'm probably fairly honest about that. We're soloing stuff in the mountains with, you know, no ropes or sometimes with ropes, but having rocks fly past us and pulling people out of crevasses and it's just a lottery sometimes with climbing. And if I'd if I kept on doing that stuff, it's just a question of time, I think. You know, I'd lost
right.
lost a good mate in the Himalayas climbing. Craig, bless his heart. You know, our idea of fun was to go up the Remarkables on his motorbike and traverse the Remarkable range.
Wow.
And get back to the Kowo Bridge and jump off it on a rope. Great fun, but, you know, he perished in the Himalayas. And, you know, another friend perished in Cave Creek, and he was too young to perish. And we'd met through climbing, and so fate, when fate taps us on the shoulder, we can't avoid it. And I'm just so grateful.
No, that's right.
I've learnt that those runners in skimpy shorts and too tight singlets, they're not freaking geeky. Well, not all of them anyway.
No.
And no. The first run, there you go.
That's fantastic. And the love of a good woman, eh? Turned your head and curative. Look, Marty, thank you. It's been such a pleasure.
Yeah, cheers. Really appreciate it.
I loved hearing that chat. I did love hearing that chat. And like I said, it felt like a history lesson as well. Raro and Ginger Nuts for the win.
Raro and Ginger Nuts for the win. And also Gary Ritkin and Sean Cooper for the win. Like I can't, you know, and I'm so privileged that A, you know, I've sort of got to hang out with Gary quite a bit. And B, like, I remember seeing Sean running from his house, which is all the way over the other side of the forest, to Gary's house. And I was out plodding in the forest. This is years before I knew. And he's just, I think he had a small plastic bag of something. I don't know what was in it. But like he had maybe a bottle. And he was just running like just up this hill. It was just so incredible. My jaw dropped. And, you know, like true legends of the sport. Like
absolutely.
Giants.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And being, you know, being able to teleport back somehow to those days and seeing those ding dong battles and seeing, you know, that breakthrough run when he did win Kepler finally would have been amazing. But anyway,
amazing.
Great conversation. Amazing. Thank you, Marty. And thank you, Matt.
And thank you very much to you all for tuning in. We're on social media at Dirt Church Radio, and you can email us at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com. You can find us on all the podcast platforms. Like and subscribe if you fancy, and you can download direct from the website, which is dirtchurchradio.com.
Don't forget to write in with your greatest run ever. We'd love to hear from you, and you can send them in to us, hear us read them out, and then you can read them on the website too. Send them in to us, dirtchurchradio@gmail.com.
Thanks to our sponsors, Scott Running, Further Faster, and Cielli. Thank you to our Patreon patrons and Wild Things, and especially SOS Hydration, and thank you to our editor, Kieran. Stay tuned next week. We've got a really great show lined up.
Do we what? Mā te wā.
Thanks, Rigby.